the highest aim that we can achieve in the man body is to know God. So to know God, there are some essentials. First, we must know ourselves first. We are conscious entities, the drop of the ocean of all consciousness, of the same essence as that of God. So man body is the highest, golden opportunity that we have got, in which alone we can find Him. So find Him, there are some further things required. Someone in whom God is manifest, who is Word made flesh, who has seen Him. Lord Krishna says, if you want to see God, you must go to somebody who has seen God. Who has not seen God, how can he make you see God? First you require that. And further thing is, what is such world made flesh man, and what should be our relation with him? So God-man, God resides in every heart in which He is manifest and been commissioned by God to bring back the child humanity who are bewildered in the world. So what a God-man will do? First, they give a demonstration how to know ourselves. Not merely at the level of feelings or trying inferences, but really raising up from the man body up to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes, and there open your inner eye to see the light of God. This is the first function. Though we have not seen God, how can we make you see God? That's the first thing. And further, what should be our relation to such a person? That's very important. You know, in all religions, in all so-called social bodies, the purpose is to know God. Naturally, all religions say that you have joined there only to know God. So God is the beloved of all. So thousands are the lovers of God in all religions, in the East or the West. But beloved is the same. Call Him by any name you like, God, Allah, Vaheguru, or any other name. So that God, there are two aspects of God. One is God absolute, the other is God into expression. Absolute God nobody has seen any time in life. When He wanted to be many, there was vibration, that power came into expression, that is called word, naam, or shabd. That has two aspects, light and sound. So we can see God in the form of light and sound. God is manifested all through the universe. Only the question remains, with what eyes we can also see God, which the masters have seen. And they say those eyes are different. They are not the eyes of the flesh or bones in which He can be seen, but there is some other eye which is latent, which is called third eye, single eye. When that is opened, the Master opens that eye to enable you to see God. So there are two kinds of teaching given by the Master. One is by the word of mouth and one by receptivity. By the word of mouth you can have about one third of the teaching. By two third, many two third will have by receptivity. So to have success in this way, full success in this way, to have devotion for the Master. So devotion means when two become one. God, man is the mouth of God, and one man becomes Guru man, then naturally becomes God man. So there are so many religions. In every religion, they are all meant to enable us to see God. So God is the same. They are not different for Hindus or Mohammedans or different nations. It is not the monopoly of any sect or of any country. The sun rises, that gives light to all the world over. Similarly, such like persons in whom God is manifest, they come for all the world over. So, He whom we desire is the beloved of the whole world, and the one God of all men, of not specifically for any religion, one or the other. So God is one for man, for all creation and all his devotees. As the desire, those who have the desire to meet God, He is the same. So target is one, artist may be many. So, whichever archer shoots at the target, he desires the full benefit on the man's body. So this is the first thing that is required, like devotion is required. And those who are really after God, they are all really brothers and sisters of God. Truly speaking, we are all drops on the ocean of all consciousness. We are brothers and sisters in God. But those who are all after the same object, then they are truly related to each other. So within each master soul, there has been one thing that we notice. And what is that? That he has got devotion for his Guru. And without the devotion, none can have realization, full realization. For instance, Christ said what? I am the vine, you are the branches, he that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. Very clear words. If branches are embedded in the tree, they bear forth fruit. If they are cut off, then they can bear no fruit. So for that reason, this is the thing most important. And we are wanting many cases like that. We may be abiding by the... First of all, we do not keep His commandments. Christ said, if ye love me, keep my commandments. To keep commandments is first thing, but to have devotion is still higher. So for that reason, Christ said, I am the vine, you are the branches. So long as you remain abandoned in me, you bear forth much fruit. Then he very clearly said, you cannot do without me. So devotee cannot do without the Guru. It means that as long as one is not truly joined to one's Guru, one cannot be true devotee, and furthermore cannot really become a true devotee of the Lord. So this is what Master said, you see. Prophet Muhammad says, God is so great that all these universes I have made, they are all high or low, they are not sufficient to maintain me. But strange enough, I reside in the heart in which I am manifest. To be the group which is God, for we have not yet seen God, and we must become as subtle, as fine as He is to be able to do so. Up to that level, God is subtlest of the subtlest. And we should also come up to that level if you want to see Him. But until then, each man views life from his own level. So, as I said, those who have not seen God, how can you? First step is stepping stone is Guru, Master. To take the example, there's nothing. There is something, but it is not up to the level of rise. Either our eyes should be so fine, so subtle as the air is, or whatever is in the air, so much magnified so that it can come to the level of rise, only then we'll see. Take the example of a microscope. That, you see, that magnifies anything about 700 times more. If you see through it, you'll find microbes filled in the air, which are now even there, but as our eyes are not at that level, you cannot see it. So if man is not high as God, then what is his first step? So there comes the question, Guru precedes God, for God manifests in the Guru. And from man level, teacher of man should be a man. So God manifests in some human form, just to teach other men on the man body. If God begins to speak from high heavens, who would care? We want somebody who has lived like us in the world, passed through the world ups and downs, and can also live unaffected, and also lead us to be contacted with God. So for that reason, so Guru precedes God, see? Therefore comes before God. He is God-man, God plus man. If a disciple truly becomes Guru-man, he also becomes God-man. Let's see, there's a cave of mind, the mind. A child is born in the mind, it is all darkness. He has never seen light of the sun. Someone says, look here, there's the sun rising outside, and he is in the mind, his darkest cave of the mind. He says, I don't know, then what does he do? He just have a mirror, put the rays of the sun reflected into the cave. Then he sees some light. It is something like that. A hen was sitting on the eggs. When they are just ready to hatch, she said to the children, look at children, so there's sun rising outside, there are fields outside, and the child says, mother, it might be so, but it is all darkness. What does she and does it? She pricks the hand, and the child within pricks the hand, and the hand again broken. We saw that there is clear light. This is something like that, Master does. Before we go to Him, we say it is all dark, there is no God, who says there is God? We close our eyes, it is all darkness. But when He gives us a demonstration, a sitting, He withdraws our attention from our outside, raises up to the level of the eyes, He begins to see light. So God is there. Such persons have borne evidence, there is God, and we have seen, and you can also see. On whom? Who can see? On whom the grace of God descends. And how? God brings him in contact with someone in which he is manifest. Call him by any name you like. Unless one sees, how can you meditate upon it? Without seeing, how can you meditate on God? So God means open your inner eye to give some experience to start with, some capital to start. Here is this light. Then more, higher as it rises, the light grows more and more. So for that reason, we can only see that light if we can up, to that level. So how can person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? So firstly, devotion is the Guru is very necessary. As I told you, one-third by word of mouth and two-third by devotion, receptive. So Guru is not the body mind that. He is word made flesh, he is word. Word is the Guru, manifested man body. So we respect the man body, word is made flesh. So, as he is eternal, note, Guru is that power which is manifested upon the human soul, and as such, he is never born nor dies. Now how can you? It is only that takes the form of man body to take you from the level of man. So, even though all masters took of the body and then left it, and we must also do the same. We have to leave the body someday. That power which works through the human form never dies. So, God speaks through the body. Without the body, what can Brahma do? He must have some vehicle through which he can speak to man or in the vehicle. So this is the reason of why God in man is required, God plus man is required. So, but the power through which he is manifesting is also we respect him because the manifesting, God is manifesting in there. So devotion must necessarily start with the body, we see. You'll find eyes are the windows of the soul. And soul, whatever condition it is, if intoxicated, that radiation by radiation intoxication. If the soul is just all love, the natural love radiates through the eyes. And further, we see the glimpse of what is manifesting in his eyes. Those intoxicated with God, naturally you radiate, you have the radiation of God intoxication there. That is why our Master used to say when we did bow down to him, he said, what is underneath? Look at me, I am up through my eyes. So eyes are the windows also. In whatever color it is, dyed, you will have the same radiation. So this raises us to a higher level and no importance, so the importance of the Guru. Bhakti or devotion to the Guru has been stressed by all masters. Christ said the same thing. Saint Paul echoed the same when he said, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. How to be one in the physical body. So Hafiz explained that his heart was so full of the Beloved that the thought of his being there was gone. He became one with the Beloved. When the two eyes become four, two eyes face to face, so soul speaks through the eyes by radiation. So Hafiz says, I was so filled in my Beloved that I forgot who I am. I am Hafiz or somebody else. He also says, oh God, oh my Guru, I may become the body and you become my life. So much so the people may not say later on that I was else and you were other than I. So when two becomes one, when love is such a sword, other outer sword when you strike against a thing that makes into two parts. And love is such a sword when it strikes through two to two souls, through the eyes, they become one. All duality is gone. So for that reason he says, I and you may become one. I may become the body, you may become my soul, so that people may not say that I was someone, they all say you were somebody else. Kabir says, outward looking, I and God are two, but it is only with whom have not met a guru. Then you say, he is the same. That is why sometimes you will find their very form changes into the guru who is the mouthpiece of the guru. So all masters say, in various phraseology of course, Hafiz again says sometimes that I have been grafted into my friend. When you graft two branches of different trees, what happens? The fruit which appears to be the same of the branch, but the color and fragrance of that is mother tree. They appear to be two, but the fragrance and the very work is the same. One is grafted to the Guru, there is no fear of anything, because Guru is not the body. Guru is the world made flesh. Once it so happened, Ramakrishna was sitting, there was one plate full of honey, and Vivekananda was there. He asked Vivekananda, you are a bee, and this is a sea of mortality. Where from you eat it? He says, sir, I will eat it only from this corner. Then why? So that my wings may not be smeared with the honey and may be caught. He said, well, Vivekananda, it is a sea of immortality, plunged headlong into it. He said, no death. When God, man, world made flesh is eternal, no fear, death for him. How can you fear when you have become one with him? This is the whole mystery of success. This is very most important. All gurus have the same thing. And for future also, who will become with the guru, they will have the full right. The whole thing is reflected out there. So you will find, for them such a man, there is no birth, no death, no more coming and going, no illusion, no negative power, for whom who is down into the very nectar of life. One is plunging into the immortality. How can have any fear of that? Just to explain this very thing, painters of one country went to the other country, presented themselves to the king of that country and told him, we know very high class paintings, you kindly give us a chance to show you our painting. He allotted an audience, that was a big hall, and one side was, wall was given audience, you go on painting on this wall. Those painters of his own country also came up, sir, we also know painting, you kindly also give a chance to show our merit. All right, they put a curtain in the middle of the hall, and all right, you act on the other hall. So in a month or so that was ready. Those painters who came from the other country, they went to the king, our painting is ready, would you kindly have a visit to that? He has been visiting those painting of the other country, men of the other country, he was seeing they are doing something. But the men of his own country were doing nothing on the other wall. He went there, saw it was wonderful painting done by those men. And then the painters of his own country, sir, will you kindly examine our painting too? He said, well, you have done nothing, how do you say? Sorry, the curtain was taken off. To great amazement of the king was, the very paintings which were on the other wall were reflected. Whatever paintings were done in the end, there still somewhere some little blemishes, but in that thing that was not. He wonderstruck, what have you done? Sir, we have done nothing. See? Then we have been rubbing the wall so that it may reflect. So this is something condition of the Sikh, disciple and the Guru. The criterion of that is that you put the same question to the Guru and to the disciple living miles away. They have uttered the same words in them. They are two in one and one in two. So such a devotion is required to have success in spirituality. Benefit, many men are befitted, you see. They are saved from coming and going, then made to work later on. But such persons who have to guide other child humanity, there is such like a fate. If you want to have derive full benefit from their company, we must develop receptivity. Kabir says, master may be living on one side of the seven oceans and the disciple on the other side, direct your attention to that. Now television we see, radio so we see, who is speaking, what he is speaking, with thousands of miles. Similarly, when two hearts become receptive, just wireless, your tick here, the same tick is there. So it is also the law of nature, which it is no miracle, but it is the law of nature, which you have forgotten. So this is the simplest way of realizing God. Pick up it. You have that, then it's all right. You want become as a, any saint would require, any king would require a son to become a king, not a minister. Every saint to whom you go, what he wants? He wishes you all become saints. Every father wants his son to be more shining than himself, is it not? So I have just submitted, keeping commandments is the first thing. And developing devotion is splendid. You will become one with it. Nothing to make effort. The same thing is reflected in you. And this is state of those who rub their mind so clearly that nothing remains other than it except God or the Godhead. So, such kind of master, what they do? They give us, you see, so many things. If you come face to face to him, eyes become two eyes, the two eyes meet. The radiation works through the eyes. And that gives you little, what? Stillness. By seeing which, your mind stills for a while, that's the first sign of a saint. Not that your body is sitting and you are just wandering outside, not like that. Just sit face to face and soul will work through the eyes, radiation. What it does, this is the first thing in the company of the saints. By seeing which, by sitting in the company of which, you have little mind at rest. Why? Because the saint or the master, he's got stillness within, you see. By radiation his heart is at rest. In intoxication of others also, he controls the souls of anybody. When souls are little attracted, then mind works only from the soul. So ultimate results come when mind does not run away for a while, for the while you are sitting full attention there. So if those who come at the feet of such a master, the result is we become air-conditioned. How? We draw, all these feelings come out of things when we are in the controlled by the organ faculties. And the master gives you a rise, demonstration to rise above outgoing faculties. And from there only, it is we who give strength to the outgoing faculties and outward things. When your same master gives it, sitting like that, you are given a contact with the God and His special power within you, intoxicated, your soul is intoxicated with that. Naturally, You also, when have stayed there, when you are concentrated there, you work in the world, but outer things do not reach you.
Good evening. Welcome to the satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was a talk given by Master on November 27, 1972 at Lincoln High School in Anaheim, California. Our reader this evening is Claire Stannard. Hi, Claire.
Hello, Pradeep. Hello, everybody. Today I'm continuing to read The Purpose of Human Life, talk by Kripal Singh, published in the March 1968 issue of Sat Sandesh. Contemplate the form of Satguru and serve him true, and he shall lead thee away from all harm, Swamiji. Swamiji now tells us how to link the soul with the Nam power. He says that three steps should be taken to rise above body consciousness. First is Simran, contemplation, continuous remembrance of the Almighty. Second, service to the Master. Third, control of all desires. We are always busy in contemplating worldly affairs. If we have to establish a contact with the Word of God, we must first constantly remember Him by any name of our choice. This should be our first and foremost ideal by inculcating the habit of His contemplation every moment of our life. We have to replace worldly thoughts by contemplating the Word. Contemplate on Him alone ceaselessly, so much so that you begin to feel the pangs of His separation. Thus, the first step is His remembrance. Remembrance leads to love, which in turn results in pangs of separation. This creates a strong urge for the beloved. Only one to remember and to sigh for. Sing ceaselessly His praise alone. Meditate on Him with all the love in thee. Gurbani. Simran should be undertaken with intense love for God. Love brings concentration. One forgets the whole world while contemplating one's beloved. Another purpose of Simran is to identify the soul with its real form. Yet another aim of Simran is to enable the self to know itself. As it is, the soul is completely identified with the physical body. It has to be withdrawn from the body and concentrated at its seat in the center of the eyebrows. In the Gita, Lord Krishna says that great ones traverse into the cave, starting from a place above the nose. There are various methods of doing Simran, with the help of a rosary, or with tongue, or in throat and heart. However, saints do not advise these methods, as they are apt to become mechanical and allow the mind to wander away. Thus, concentration of attention through those methods may not be possible. Saints have, therefore, advised the practice of Simran with the tongue of thought. All saints, including Malani Rumi, Guru Arjan and Swamiji, have indicated this spiritual path. Guru Arjan prayed, "O saints, take pity on us. We have yet to learn to serve our souls. We are working on the mental and sensual planes. Until we learn to rise above body consciousness, our plight remains unchanged." Yogis tried to control breathing through kumbhak to achieve concentration of attention. It is a difficult process, and everyone cannot practice it. Saints, therefore, do not interfere with the breathing function. They concentrate their attention at the seat of the soul, behind and in the center of the two eyes, by means of Simran with the tongue of thought. If it is done with rapt attention, the soul will cease to flow out through the body pores. The body will then become senseless. It is only thereafter that the concentrated soul gets the contact of God. However, Simran with the tongue of thought is not as easy as it appears to be. It can be accomplished successfully only through the blessings of a competent master. Now, there is a difference between practicing Simran by repeating the names given by a competent master and the name or names taken out of scriptures of one's religious belief. The names given by a competent living master at the time of initiation are charged with his thought transference and have tremendous force in them. This type of Simran, therefore, is above all other forms of Simran. The Vedas and other scriptures have stated that in order to seek God, one must seek the guidance of a true master. Besides giving the charge names, the master also gives a practical contact with the divine power. Now the question is how to get that competent guidance. Swamiji tells us to serve the master. One can serve the master in many ways, physically, financially, intellectually, and spiritually. One should lead a chaste and clean life. Keep the body ever engaged in selfless service. This is physical service. As for monetary service, spend a part of your income for charity. After fulfilling your family requirements, you must keep aside a part of your earnings in the name of God. This is a duty one must not neglect. Service by heart and mind means love for all, hatred for none, and observance of truth. The service of the soul is of the highest order. To do this, one has to rise above body consciousness and to open the inner eye. Hazur used to say that a master may keep a servant or two to serve him. He does not need our services in the normal sense. If we only obey his commandments, keep our lives chaste and pure, we not only serve the master, but also our own self. The master loves them most who serve their own souls and lead a pious life. So Swamiji exhorts us to imbibe the feeling of service and to refrain from sensual desires. All desires are included in sensuality. The observance of celibacy is most important. Just as light and darkness cannot stay together, the word and sensual desires are not compatible. Therefore, we must observe celibacy. Married people need not despair. They ought to live a disciplined life in accordance with the scriptures, where marital relations are permitted only for procreation. Grihastashram, family system, is a great institution. Most saints or great souls, mahatmas, were householders and fulfilled their family obligations. Hazur has said that those who wish to bring up their children pure and chaste should themselves become so. Children tend to emulate their parents. Swamiji thus asks us to take three steps if we want to rise above body consciousness and to get contact with the Nam, to practice Simran, to serve Satguru, and to lead a chaste life. Swamiji says that you can have a taste of the divine nectar with the help of a true master only after you have brought your mind and sensual desires under control. At present, the soul is flowing out through the senses. Discipline your senses and keep your mind steady. You will then know who you are. When you have realized yourself, only then the question of realizing the over-self will arise. Those who have disciplined their senses can free themselves from the influence of enemies like lust, anger, greed, attachment, and vanity. These five deadly enemies attack us through the five senses. You can escape their fatal attacks if you rise above body consciousness. The Upanishads state, "The soul is riding a chariot of the body, driven by horses of the senses, with the mind as its reins and the intellect as its driver in the field of sensual pleasures." Swamiji therefore stresses the need to discipline the senses and the mind. When this is done and the soul rises above body consciousness, the master is there inside to offer the divine elixir of Nam. Now, are these teachings meant for any particular sect? The teachings of all great souls are meant for the entire humanity and not for the followers of any particular religion. Hazur used to say, "Go to the door where Satguru, full of compassion and mercy, is waiting to receive you." Which is that door? This door is in the center and behind your two eyebrows. Once the soul gets an opportunity of testing the elixir of Nam, it has a starting point for its spiritual journey to the ultimate destination. Moreover, this will bring about freedom from the dragnet of the mind. Mind is a tremendous hurdle on the spiritual path. The world at large has always been its victim. Even Mahatmas and Rishis, great souls in the past, who tried various methods to control the mind, often succumbed at some stage to its powerful impact. So we have to control the mind. How can it be done? The mind cannot be controlled by outer pursuits like learning or studying the scriptures. Even if it is under check for a while, it again goes out of control, for it is always after sensual pleasures. There are mainly two types of attractions for the mind: beautiful things to look at and sweet melodies to hear. Just now, if you happen to hear melodious music, your attention will be diverted to it. The only way to keep it under control is to link it with Nam that has both these attractions. At various spiritual planes within, you have wonderful visions to see, as also enchanting melodies to hear. When the mind has more fascinating experience within than it has outside, it is automatically subdued. Thus, only by establishing a contact with Nam, one becomes desireless. According to a parable, once Lord Krishna plunged into the river Yamuna, where a thousand-headed cobra used to live. Lord Krishna performed a dance on the cobra's head to the tune of his favorite flute and subdued the deadly snake. What does the parable signify? The thousand-headed cobra is the mind itself. The mind poisons us in innumerable ways. By attuning to the celestial sound current within, mind can be subdued. There is no other remedy. A Muslim mystic has said that if you have firmly resolved to reach God, Put one step on your mind, and your second step will be in God's court. Swamiji now advises us to give up procrastination and to start meditation without delay. Sihaj Yoga, the path shown by saints, has three aspects: Simran, meditation, and catching the celestial sound current. Simran lifts the soul above body consciousness. Once this is done, meditation or contemplation with rapt attention provides a resting place for its stay there until it catches and listens to the celestial sound current. Shamasi Tibrez says, "Every moment a divine sound is calling my soul to come to the Lord." Tulsi Sahib also says, "Listen with rapt attention at the archway of the real Kaaba body, and you will hear a call from the beyond. This body is the temple of God, and the forehead is the archway of the temple as described by Tulsi Sahib. Procrastination is the thief of time. We tend to postpone meditation on one pretext or the other. Start meditation forthwith so that we may come out of the mortal body, which is the domain of negative power. After all, this body has to be left behind. If we learn to leave it while alive, death will not perturb us. You will then be carefree." Swamiji says that only the Satguru is capable of pulling the soul above body consciousness. Therefore, pray with every breath for the grace of a true master. I have already discussed the functions of Simran, i.e., it brings the soul above body consciousness. Another equally important point is that the soul is attached to the body, and unless a competent master helps us with his thought transference through personal attention, the soul cannot be separated and lifted above body consciousness. Here lies the greatness and importance of the Satguru. As a matter of fact, the real test of a guru is that he is capable of pulling the soul to its own seat. We must, therefore, pray for his grace and help. All great souls have prayed likewise. Maulana Rumi testifies it by asking, "Who is capable of saving the humanity from this mysterious box, world?" Only either a prophet or a master commissioned to do that. We have thus to seek the help of a realized soul, but he must really be a realized soul. When a so-called master cannot lift his own soul above body consciousness, how can he help others? The responsibility of a competent master is great indeed. Not only he guides and helps us in this world, but he is also a torchbearer in our journey within. Swamiji therefore emphasizes that the only way out is to pray to a competent master. Out of compassion, he will give you an experience of superconsciousness. Thereafter, follow his commandments. Remember him constantly with all your heart, and ever remain eager to serve him. Tulsi Sahib also asks us to look through the veil of darkness behind the pupil of the eyes. How to do it? He tells us to go to a God-realized soul. Such a master will give you some inner experience, pull you above body consciousness, and tell you how to see through the darkness within. Your inner eye will thus be opened. All saints agree on this point. Swamiji has advised us to seek the company of a true master with love. Go there with devotion, leaving behind all worldly ideas. You should then have only one thought, the thought of your master. Sit there with solitude and listen with full attention to what the master has to say. Swamiji now explains the importance of satsang. He says, attend satsang in all seriousness. We have to solve the mystery of life and death. Grasp and imbibe what is taught there. We are fortunate if we get in touch with the true master and get inner experience through his grace. If we do not act on his commandments, our spiritual progress will be retarded. That is why so much emphasis is laid on doing away with unnecessary worldly things. This way, one's spiritual experience will continue to grow until a luminous form of the master appears within. He will talk to you and guide you. On getting proper guidance from the master, devote adequate time to meditation and mold your life according to the master's teachings. We must have tenacity of purpose, as we cannot afford to slacken our efforts in our present state when we have yet to rise above body consciousness. Finally, Swamiji explains what is Nam, the word, what is the destination, and what is our ideal. He says that our aim is to merge our soul with Sat Nam, true word, the eternal nameless God power. We have first to rise above body consciousness and get the lowest link. After gradually traversing the various higher planes, the soul will finally reach where there is nothing but all truth. The three regions, primal, subtle, and causal, are destructible. Beyond these three regions is Sat Lok, or Sach Khand, which is the abode of the Almighty. This is our goal, and we must achieve it. Jesus Christ, at the time of leaving his immortal frame, instructed his disciples first to accomplish what he had taught them. The human birth has given you a golden opportunity. Make the best use of it. So that's the end of the talk, The Purpose of Human Life, that was published in March 1968 issue of Satsang Desh. In the time that's left, I'll read from The Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Book 2, Chapter 16, Selfless Service Physical. Nishkam Seva, or selfless service, to all living creatures in sorrow and distress. If one limb of the body is in torture, the other limbs can have no rest. Service before self should therefore be our motto in life. Service is considered an ornament to a beautiful person that adorns and elevates his or her soul to become a clean vessel for his grace. Service of any type, granted at the holy feet of the master, is beneficial and should be cherished, as whatever one does must bring its fruit in accordance with the law of karma. The secret of selfless service is to deny a reward or recognition of any type, and on the contrary, consider oneself as a humble instrument in the divine hands, which are the sustainers and protectors of all. All credit goes to the master, yet the media of love are blessed with the superb divine intoxication, which is of supreme magnitude. Selfless service for the holy cause of the master should serve as a beacon light for inner progress. It should not be a source of pride or fake ego, which definitely becomes stumbling impediments and hurdles on the path divine. Selfless service is a great virtue and accordingly means some extra labor and sacrifice. It is the manifestation of love and goodness. Mind and body become sanctified through selfless service, provided it is undertaken without ego or vanity. Love knows service and sacrifice. A humble person knows best how to serve the holy cause under the protective guidance of the living master. The climax of selfless service is the annihilation of the ego, considering oneself to be a humble servant of the Lord Master, entrusted with certain duties to be carried out through him or her, and deeming it to be a fortune of the highest order. The little self or ego within has to be eliminated by dissolving it into service of humanity. For all are children of one God, no matter how and where situated or in what inhibitions and limitations of one kind or another they might be living. You may have to face heavy odds, for it is an uphill task, but all adverse winds blow over. If one is able to efface oneself for a higher cause, this in itself provides a shield and a buckler to the true crusader and helps in overcoming the seemingly insurmountable obstacles. The tougher the struggle, the brighter shines the metal within. This helps to liberate the finer instincts until one has risen to a great spiritual stature, towering like a beacon light, shedding rays of hope and encouragement to the lone and weary traveler, shipwrecked on the stormy and strife-ridden sea of life. No one can be said to have been born for himself alone, for none can be an island unto himself. To serve the needy, sick, and starving is also a sideline, more effective than mere preaching. Service before self stirs and kindles embers of sympathy, kindness, and love. These virtues have a great purifying effect and clean a person of all his dross and entitle him to the highest knowledge of divinity. Pleasure tastes well after service is a well-known adage. Selfless service is a great reward in itself. The more one serves silently, unostentatiously, with love and humility, in a smiling, eager, and spiritual mood, the more quickly does he earn the pleasure of the Master. When you serve others, you are serving him. Selfless service is done in two ways. The first is physical service. If somebody is sick, go and serve him. Shall I see somebody in need, hungry, naked, poor fellow? The masters have always been for the poor, for the needy, to console them, to raise them up to the level of every man. If you attend a sick person or stand by an afflicted one, you serve the divine cause. Certainly, you do not and cannot take away the sickness or affliction. But surely you can help in assuaging the sufferings by your kindly words and deeds. Every sweet word uttered or helping hand extended to those in distress goes a long way in purifying the mind and the body. A loving heart is a fit receptacle for the divine grace, for God is love. What does service to Satguru mean? Mere lip service, saying Ram, Ram, or merely putting one's head on his feet is no service. It is a mockery. But he who takes his Guru as the ever-present power of God within him lives in awe of that and knows that that power has constant observation over all his thoughts and action, will he ever sin? Furthermore, he will hold heartfelt respect for his Satguru's words. Satguru's words are the Satguru. This kind of devoted service will achieve salvation. Well, we'll stop there as our time is up. I read the second half of The Purpose of Human Life from the March 1968 issue of Sat Sandesh. And then I read from the teachings of Kirpal Singh, Selfless Service Physical. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Claire, for reading for us. There were 56 people who attended the satsang today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Be not deluded as we are now. We think perhaps this is the only place, this we will live here forever, but nobody has lived here forever. This is a golden opportunity we have got to find our way back to God.